If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 752. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about Crusader castles and canyoneering, ancient cities, Roman ruins and Bedouin camps, deserts and the Dead Sea, as we go to the country of Jordan. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Jordan. I'd like to welcome to the show Yulia Denisyuk, who is a travel photographer and writer who also runs tours, and you can find those at nomadandjewels.com. And Yulia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. So excited to be here and to talk about my love, Jordan.
And Jordan being the country, not your boyfriend.
Yes, exactly. Although for the amount of time that I'm coming to Jordan, you could think that it's becoming my boyfriend.
Well, and you say the amount of time. So what is your connection to Jordan?
So I first went to Jordan in 2017 on a work trip, actually. I was there on an assignment and I completely fell in love with the country so much that I decided to come back fairly soon after. And then I just kept coming back and I developed friends there, developed a community there and kept coming back both for work, but also for personal reasons. Wanted to study Arabic a little bit more, then decided to start the travel company. So it just kind of all came together. But I love Jordan. I've been there probably close to 20 times now in the past 4 years or so.
Well, and this is not the first time we've done a show on Jordan. We've done at least one when I went to Jordan a while back, but it had been a while. So Yulia pitched me this and it seemed like a good idea because I also love the country of Jordan. Mm-hmm. Why should someone go to Jordan?
I think Jordan is one of those places that doesn't leave you neutral, right? Like you said, you go there and you either completely fall in love. In fact, I don't think I've met anyone who has gone to Jordan and said, meh, it was so-so, right? Most people really fall in love with the country. For me, it was really a combination of several factors. First of all, it's such an incredibly diverse place. Mm-hmm. Most people, when they think of Jordan, they probably think of Petra only mm-hmm. as like the destination to see in Jordan. But there are so many different diverse landscapes. There is the desert. There is two seas there. There is incredible forests and olive groves in the north of the country. There is the deserts in the east of the country. There's just so much to see, so much diversity, and in a very compact area, right? Jordan is a small country, so you can see a lot of these different places in a very short amount of time. But for me, on top of that, on top of the diverse landscapes, the incredible culture in Jordan, the Bedouin communities who are still living in the way they used to live centuries and centuries ago, mm-hmm. in many ways, you can see that culture, you can touch and interact with that culture today. The people are incredible, very welcoming, very hospitable. The food is amazing. There is just so much to see and to experience. And to do all of that, you're able to do all of that in a short amount of time because it's a small country.
Excellent. And what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for someone who's going to Jordan for the first time?
The most important thing is to plan outside of Petra. And what I mean by that is that it really breaks my heart when I see people just come into Jordan with the intention of visiting Petra in and out and they're moving. Because a lot of times people combine trips in the region, right? So they might go to Israel, they might go to Egypt, and they will do like a day trip to Petra or something like that as a tag along for those trips. And that just really breaks my heart because people really should come to Jordan and stay there for a week or two and see all the incredible places that the country has to offer.
Okay, well, and let's get specific. So where are you going to send them?
Yeah, totally. So I like to start exploration of the country in the Dead Sea, actually.
Okay, so we're going to fly into Amman if we're coming in via air, and then you're going to take us right down to the Dead Sea, which is about an hour away.
It's actually about as close from the airport as the city is itself. So from the airport, you go straight to the Dead Sea. You relax there for a day or two, just because the flight is pretty intense, especially if you're coming from the U.S. You're going to need some time to rest up a bit and to get into the groove of things. And it's the most perfect place to do that is the Dead Sea. You just float. You see the sea that is retreating, and you just sort of orient yourself. And then from there, what I want to do is I want to send you to Madaba, which is a town just outside of Amman and near the Dead Sea, which is one of a few Christian towns in the country. Mm-hmm. And Madaba is another one of those places that often just gets a quick stopover. But there's a lot to see there as well. There's several incredible churches there. One of the churches there is a place where you can go underground and see some of the relics from the biblical times, basically. It's just incredible. There is an amazing restaurant in Madaba as well. There is the Mosaics Museum, because Madaba is really known for its mosaics.
And when you say mosaics, we're talking about things that are Roman mosaics or Byzantine, I assume.
Exactly. Okay. Well, one of the things that you can see there is this incredible map of this whole biblical region in the Church of St. George there in Madaba. And that map is done with these sort of tiny square mosaics that are a trademark of Madaba.
And so this is a map of the region from the 6th century. Some pieces missing, some assembly required here. And you got to be able to read Greek to read the place names in the mosaic. So it's helpful if you have a guide to point out to you what you're looking at in this Orthodox church floor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And it's just incredible to see, even though, like you said, only some parts of the map are visible now, but still I just find it's a fascinating sight to see all the ancient cities in the region represented there. And after you do that exploration of the churches and the mosaics, I recommend to stop by this restaurant there called Haret Zhdudna restaurant. And oh my God, you have to plan to spend several hours in that restaurant because they're going to just this incredible spread, which is the custom in the region to do these huge spreads with all kinds of different mezzes, appetizers and salads and lots of beer and all that good stuff. It's just really good food.
Well, and to put that in perspective, if I go to someplace like Italy, I might have a 3-course meal or something like that. How many dishes would you guess are typically on a table at a restaurant like this when they serve dinner?
Oh yeah, it's going to be anywhere from 10 to 15 different dishes.
Right.
and a lot of them are heavy dishes too, with rice, with lamb, with chicken, and all that good stuff. So yeah, definitely plan to eat a lot of good food and a lot of long and beautiful meals to be had there for sure. Okay. And then after Madaba, we're going to head down King's Highway, which is this ancient trading route in Africa and Asia that went through this part of the world. And it's called the King's Highway. And it's basically this incredible, incredible road which cuts through the canyons there and cuts through the Great Rift Valley, which goes through Jordan as well. Mm-hmm. You can see the mountains and you can see the canyons, and the landscape is just breathtaking. And usually when I go, we basically stop at every corner to take a picture, and it takes way longer than it can. breathtaking.
Now, there are three north and south roads that run up and down Jordan. Again, not a big country. And you're taking the middle of the three, not the one right along the Dead Sea and not the one out more in the desert, but the one that's a little more windy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the one that goes through this mountainous landscape. Although I do sometimes take the Dead Sea route as well, because okay. that's picturesque as well. That's mm-hmm. also incredibly beautiful to see the Dead Sea on one side and then the canyons rising up on the other side. But I think in terms of the breathtaking meter of the road, nothing compares to the King's Highway.
Okay.
And that road will then lead us to Wadi Dana, which Wadi Dana is Dana Nature Reserve, mm-hmm. Jordan's largest nature reserve. They have several, actually. They have another one called Shomari, which is on the east of the country. But Wadi Dana is more on the southwestern side. And it's basically 350 square kilometers of incredible, incredible biosphere with a mm-hmm. lot of and animals, birds, again, canyons, different hiking trails, just incredible natural landscape that's, I would say, typical of the region, the Mediterranean landscape. But take that Mediterranean landscape and put it into this rugged canyon-like terrain, and it's just incredible. Really beautiful place.
Well, you called it Wadi Dana. That's two words. The first word is a dry canyon. So
right.
you're starting from the high point of the canyon, and the canyon goes off to the west down towards the Dead Sea.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, this is amazing, Chris. You know Jordan so well.
I've been there. I've been to the Dana Nature Preserve, so, and written about it on the blog as well.
Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite places in the country for two reasons. One is because of the natural landscape itself mm-hmm. and its status as a biodiverse nature preserve. Mm-hmm. It means that nature is preserved there much better than it is in a lot of other places, unfortunately, that you'll see in Jordan. But the other reason why I love it is because Wadi Dana is actually one of the few remaining places in Jordan where Bedouin communities continue to follow the lifestyle that mm-hmm. they used to follow. I mean, it's all in gradation, I would say, because Bedouins who live in the cities, they also follow some of their traditional lifestyles, but not as much as they do in Wadi Dana. So it's a great opportunity to interact mm-hmm. with those communities and really get to know them. And one of the best ways to do that is actually by staying in Feinan Eco Lodge. Mm-hmm. The Eco Lodge in Wadi Feinan, which is sort of within this area of Wadi Dana, that is run completely by the Bedouin community that lives and works there. So when you're staying there, you're going to be supporting that local community, about 80 local families that are part of that community. And that lodge is fully solar powered. It's just an incredible lodge. It's done in that style of mud brick buildings. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very fascinating experience to stay there and to interact with the Bedouins and to go on the hikes in the area. One of my most favorite hikes there is to go on Trace, the shepherds who are shepherding goats area. Mm-hmm. And you're just sort of following them around through all the little hikes in the area, stopping for tea, and you're interacting with them, and it's just a really fascinating experience to be there.
I've written about my stay at the Feinan Eco Lodge, and I was there a relatively short period of time because I was on a press trip, and as you know, press trips are always rush, rush, rush. Mm-hmm. So probably you would want to spend more time than I did there, but I went out to one of the nearby wadis with one of the local guides who was from one of the Bedouin families there, Mohammed, so it probably doesn't narrow him down a whole lot. And we went on mountain bikes riding into the desert up the next community, and we went to an archaeological dig that was 6,000 years old of an mm-hmm. old village there. No fences up around, so he's showing me just some of the artifacts that were left there, and then he'd stopped by the tents of his family and picked up some flour and some tea and such, and made Bedouin tea and homemade bread over the coals of the fire. It was a fascinating experience and really fun experience to spend time with him and hear a little more of his family. That night there was a wedding going on with shots being fired into the air to celebrate, and it was a very different experience.
Yeah, and you know what always fascinates me, because I also did several hikes like that with the Bedouin guides. Mm-hmm. What always fascinates me is how well they actually know the land they're walking on.
Sure.
Meaning all the different plants, all the different nooks and crannies, and what each plant is supposed to be for. One of the first times I stayed in Wadi Dana, I also had a guide. He was an older gentleman. His name was also Mohammed. And it was just him and I, and he was sort of walking me through some of the easier hikes in the area. Mm-hmm. Because you can select the gradation there. There are some that are really like you're scaling rocks, basically. And there are some that are more like walks in the garden. Right. So we're doing one of those easier hikes, and he's picking up this flower, and he's like, hey, oh, and you take this for tummy ache, and you take this for headache, and you take this for when you're tired. And I'm just sort of trying to just like remember all of that, but of course I couldn't remember any of it. But it was fascinating. And not only older guides, even young folks who are guiding, they also know a lot about plants and flowers in the area. And that's really inspiring for me to see, because how much do we know about our own nature and what surrounds us? We're very, very removed from that.
Sure. Now, one thing that brings up for me is, when do you recommend that people go? Because in the heat of the summer, this area is going to get really, really hot. And in the cooler time, that Echo Lodge is going to fill up. I think I was there in May, but the heat came a little later that year. And so I think there were half a dozen of us in that lodge instead of people all over the place and sleeping on the roof. When do you recommend going to Jordan?
Yeah, that's exactly the trade-off, Chris. You nailed it, because the best time to go in Jordan is the shoulder season, of course,
right,
which is late March, April, and then again October. The weather is just pleasant. It's so mild. It's just gorgeous. But that's when everybody goes. And so
right,
Jordan is crowded at that time. So what I usually try to do is I try to come just before or just after that shoulder season.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes early March is wonderful. It's still not that crowded. The weather is already nice. September is wonderful. September can be quite hot, but it's manageable, and it's not going to be as crowded as October, for example. When you go into the later months of the year, particularly the winter, November, December, January, February, it gets tough because the weather can be unpredictable. And in a lot of the places that we're talking about today, they're going to be actually inaccessible in the winter months. In fact, I had a group once in November, and it was early November. It wasn't even that late. We were on the way from Wadi Dana to Petra,
mm-hmm,
and there were rains, torrential rains that day. And basically then it turned into this mudslide, and Petra got closed because it rains in there, there is this basically slide of water, rush of water that goes
right
through the canyon, and it can be really dangerous, and it can take people away, take horses away, cars away even.
Right.
It can be a bit unpredictable to travel in those later, not impossible, but just you're going to have to be more flexible with your time if you're traveling off season.
Okay, excellent. Where are we going to go after the Dana Biosphere?
Yeah, so after Wadi Dana, we're going to go to Petra, because of course we have to go to Petra. We can't not miss it. But what I recommend for Petra, which is this ancient abandoned city that was left by the Nabataean civilization,
mm-hmm,
there in Jordan.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to butcherbox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
What I see people do a lot is they do one day in Petra. They come in, they do the tour of Petra right away, they stay overnight, and then they move on the next morning. And I really recommend 2, and if you can, 3 days in Petra, because there's just so much to see there. And if you're going to try to cram it all into one day, you're going to be exhausted. You're just going to be so exhausted, and you're not going to enjoy anything. Petra is a very huge site. It's a sprawling site. Mm-hmm. People have this idea. If you look at pictures, the iconic...
All the pictures are going to be the same.
Right? Yeah. They're all going to show 2 things. They're going to show the Sikh, the entrance, and they're going to show the monastery. Those are the 2 iconic pictures that everybody knows. But Petra as a complex, it's a city we're talking about here, right? So it has the tombs of the king and queen. We're talking about the treasury. We're talking about the temples. There's just so many different structures there to see. And for all of that, you need at least 2 days.
Well, and for people who, I think a lot of people know exactly what we're talking about when we talk about Petra, and it's already on their bucket list. There are some, though, who don't. So I want to just get in a little more detail. When we talk about the Nabataeans, so we're talking about a civilization that was around the time of the Romans. So it's about a 2,000-ish year old city of traders. They were on their version of the Silk Road at the time. It was the spice trade that made the money for Petra. And if you ever saw the 3rd Indiana Jones movie where they go to the city carved out of stone and they go through the Slot Canyon, that was filmed at Petra. Although you won't find the Holy Grail there. They went into a building that doesn't, I mean, they went into the inside of the treasury and there is no inside of the treasury. So, but it's this well-known building we're talking about, the treasury, is you come out of this Slot Canyon and you're looking at this facade that has been carved into the sandstone there. And that is the most famous shot of the city. And there are a lot of tourists, especially tourists from other countries, who will take that picture and then leave. They won't even spend a whole day in Petra. That's it. They've walked 2 kilometers into Petra through the lovely Slot Canyon. I think the way to Petra itself is an interesting trip, even if you didn't get all the way there, but why wouldn't you? But as you say, there's so much more that a lot of people didn't see. I was only there half day, but I wasn't in charge of my own schedule, and I definitely would have liked more time there.
Yeah. And in fact, what I actually recommend to people, so this is a tip that I give to anyone when I talk about Jordan, because most people, the way they experience Petra is they go through the main entrance, through that deep canyon, which is called the Sikh, and they see the treasury. That's probably 95% of people who visit Petra. Sure. That's how they experience it. Now, what I recommend is to do something quite the opposite. I recommend to start your visit into Petra at Little Petra, which is a lesser known site just off to the side of it. It's called Albeda in Arabic, because Little Petra is lesser known, although maybe after this episode, this surprises
I think we're okay.
You start the visit there early in the morning, and you basically go into Petra through the back door. And that back door is incredible, Chris. It's incredible. You're going through canyons, you're going through mountains, you're going through wide fields of buckwheat, and you're going through little Bedouin, I wouldn't call them villages because it's just 1 or 2 families setting up camp, setting up their tents, but you're literally walking through, you see them taking their goats for a walk and making tea, and you're entering Petra that way. And that trail, it's about 15 kilometers, so it's probably 7 or 8 hours that's going to take you. But you're basically entering through that back door, and the advantage of that is that you are beating all the crowds. There's basically going to be nobody else there but you, maybe 1 or 2 other groups. But to imagine what you're talking about, when we talk about the crowds in Petra, when you're entering through the main entrance and through the Sikh, oftentimes you cannot even take a wide step because there's people in front of you, there's people behind you. There's so many people.
Again, depending on the time of year you go, which is why we talked about that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, mm-hmm. If you go in April in the high season, right, that's going to be the experience. So once we do that backdoor trail and we enter through the back door, we explore the site and all of that. Then we return to the hotel, we rest up and all of that. And then we return to the Sikh, the main entrance, for Petra by night. And Petra by night is an experience that I also recommend for people not to miss, because it's just such a magical sight to see when there are 1,000 candles laid out in front of that treasury, that main entrance part of the complex, that it's just breathtaking. And getting there at night, going through that Sikh canyon at night with the stars above you, insane amount of stars, because there is a very low light pollution, and going through that canyon, and the canyon itself is lit up by candles. It's just an incredible experience. So I recommend people try to catch that as well. It only runs certain days of the week. It doesn't run every day.
3 days a week, as I recall. I looked it up for an article I just wrote on it. So just to put this in context, what Yulia is talking about is they put luminaries. So it's like a bag with sand in it and a candle all lined up in front of the treasury, as she said. And then there's a musical program that's going on. It's a cultural program. So it's kind of a nighttime performance. It's touristy, but I thought it was very beautiful. And if you're going to go, definitely practice your nighttime photography before you take pictures. I think my camera was in the wrong mode when I took pictures there, but it's quite pretty, and I also recommend it. So Petra is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and Little Petra is also part of that inscribed site, I should say. Excellent. Anything else we want to talk about Petra? Because you don't want us to just go to Petra, we know.
I don't want your listeners to just go to
Petra. But it is an amazing site. You've got to go to Petra. She's not saying don't go to Petra.
Yes, I do actually want to mention one last thing about Petra. For especially, shall we say, adventurous travelers.
Yep.
So we've already visited Petra twice. We entered through the back door. We did that 15-kilometer hike. Then we did the Petra by night at night. The morning before you leave, you go back to Petra for a very early morning. You enter again through the main entrance. You go through the Sikh and you see the treasury very early in the morning, literally as soon as they open.
Yep.
The advantage of that is that you see the Sikh and you see the treasury again with no crowds. There is nobody there. And that time, if you're feeling like you still have some strength left in you, you can do a few of the different hikes that take you on top of the Sikh, so you can see the treasury, that again, that main building, that main site, from up above. And that's a really special experience as well. Those hikes are not easy. Some of them will require you sort of jumping across different obstacles on the way and scaling a bit of rocks and doing a bit of that. But in my opinion, that's really worth it to top off your Petra experience.
Excellent. Where are we going to go after Petra?
All right. After Petra, we're going to head to Wadi Rum. And Wadi Rum is another UNESCO World Heritage Site. Mm-hmm. And it's the desert in the south of Jordan. And here I'm going to make my plea as well. Stay there for at least a couple of days.
Okay.
Because what I see most people do is they don't even stay in the desert at all. They just do like a 4x4 trek through the desert and then they move on. I mean, of course, I understand that if you only have a limited amount of days, you're going to have to make your choices. But what I would want to encourage people is that if you're planning on visiting Jordan, try to find enough days for the well-rounded experience, because it's going to make a night and day difference in your experience of the country. And here is why. So imagine if you go to the desert of Wadi Rum for a 4x4 trek in and out, right? Sure, you're going to see the incredible landscape of those limestone and granite mountains cutting through the red sand. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to see that. But you're probably going to be there in the afternoon, and that's all you're going to see. If you're staying in the desert, and if you're there, if you're staying in one of the authentic Bedouin camps, because there's two different types of accommodations that exist there, we'll talk about that. If you're staying in an authentic Bedouin camp for a couple of days, you have an opportunity to once again engage with the people at the camp, the Bedouins. You have an opportunity to participate in a lot of amazing experiences that they're offering there. For example, one of the highlights of staying in a Bedouin camp in Wadi Rum is the experience of having a dinner meal of zarb, which zarb is Bedouin barbecue.
Mm-hmm. Which is really good.
Oh my God. It's one of the best dishes you can have. Like, mm-hmm. Absolutely, like hands down. And you're going to get to see how it's prepared because they're actually going to involve you in that experience. You're going to help them carry, I guess, vat, this huge iron thing in which you put meat and...
I would have said it was a multi-tiered tray. How's
yeah,
that?
That's a good way. Okay. Yeah, that's a good That's a good way to describe it. You help them carry it out into the desert where they put it into this hole in the ground and then they cover it with sand. They put coals on top of it and it stays there for hours and hours and hours. And then when it's time for dinner, again, you help them take it out and you all carry it back into the communal space and then dinner is served and everybody's eating together. They're eating with you. It's just a very different experience from a short 4-hour ride through the desert. The other experience that the Bedouins there do is if you're lucky and if you stay in one of those authentic camps that I mentioned, mm-hmm. a lot of them are really knowledgeable about ancient Arabic navigational knowledge and systems. So at night, after dinner, they're going to take you out into the desert, which is, well, of course, you're staying in the desert, but they're going to take you out of the camp area and into the wide open desert. They're going to lay out a blanket. They're going to have their 21st century laser that shoots up into the sky and points at different stars. And they're going to weave an amazing story of ancient Arabic navigation and how they used to orient themselves by the stars and how they traversed at night and talk about different constellations and about the seasons and what the seasons meant for Arabs in that time. You feel like you're back in time. You're traveling back in time at that point and you're there in that 6th century with these people and you're traveling through the desert with them. And it's just a magical experience. And I would not want you to miss that for anything because, I mean, isn't that why we travel, right? To be transported in that way. And you're going to get that experience if you stay overnight or stay for a couple of nights in the desert.
Well, and for those of you who can't picture Wadi Rum, first of all, you need to go rent Lawrence of Arabia again. But you've also seen it more recently. It was used for the filming of The Martian, the movie recently, because those red sands look in places like Mars. And so it's quite stunning in terms of the look. I would say it looks a little bit like Monument Valley in Arizona, except that there are petroglyphs and such there. There are markings from ancient caravan routes. So beautiful place.
Exactly. And by the way, another movie where you recently seen it is the Star Wars, the latest one, The Rise of Skywalker.
I did not know that. Okay. Excellent.
There as well.
Excellent. Where are we going to go after Wadi Rum?
So after Wadi Rum, there's a couple of choices there. So mm-hmm. if you are pressed for time, I would say that now is the time to go to Amman and stay several days in Amman. Okay. And that's another one of those that I see people skip Amman all the time and just use it really as a base in and out of the country. And I think that's an oversight because Amman is an incredible city. It's the capital of Jordan. There's mm-hmm. a lot going on there. There is so many cultural institutions and organizations in Amman that are worth taking a look at because that's what's going to give you the best understanding of Jordan today, of modern Jordan, of mm-hmm. what Jordanians think about, what they care about, how they live. It's a really incredible city. So that's option one. The other option would be to go continue down south to Aqaba and stay a couple of nights at the Red Sea there in Aqaba and do some diving, some snorkeling. There are some great opportunities to do that at Aqaba and on the Red Sea shore. And again, this is going to be sort of a trade-off. Do you spend those couple of days in Aqaba or do you spend them in Amman? And that is really then your personal preference and what mm-hmm. what speaks more to you? Do you want to do underwater diving, or do you want to explore this bustling ancient / modern city of Amman?
That's a good way of saying it too. So mm-hmm. you're talking about a city that is a very modern city, but it also goes back to, well, it goes back many, many centuries. So if you are reading in the Bible about the New Testament and Jesus goes over to the Decapolis, this is one of those cities. This is one of the 10 cities on the other side of the Jordan River. And so it was also a Roman city. There's a lovely Roman theater there. There's the Temple of Hercules. So historic place, but also very modern place. So I would lean to Amman, but I'm not a diver. So you're right. Yeah. For somebody else, it might be the other direction.
Exactly. And I'm with you, Chris. I love Amman. I'm a city girl. I'm totally going to choose Amman, but that's an option for sure. Because if you're already there in the south, you might as well continue down to Aqaba. And Aqaba is literally, I think, 30 or 40 minutes from Wadi Rum. So it's very close.
Well, so if we go to Aqaba, we're going to go diving and we're going to look for an outfitter. If we go to Amman, what are you going to recommend we do with our couple days there? What would you recommend people see there?
Mm-hmm. So, of course, you have to start with the exploration of downtown. Downtown mm-hmm. in Amman is really the place where a lot of those ancient monuments that you mentioned are. So mm-hmm. that this is where the Roman theater is. And that Roman theater is one of the best preserved and...
Oh, very well preserved, yeah.
Amazing, actually, Roman ruins outside of Rome, right? It's just mm-hmm. really... I was very fortunate to be part of... There was an opera festival there.
In the Roman theater.
Yes. And they were performing in the Roman theater, and the acoustics of that, right? You're on the open air, you're in this ancient city and you're hearing this opera. It's just magical. So if you have a chance to do something like that, it's incredible. The souk that's right nearby there, it's also a great opportunity to just see the flavor of the city, right? What are people buying? What are people selling? What does the street food look like? It's just incredible.
Well, and I think all our listeners know that when you talk about a souk, you're talking about a marketplace.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Typically a traditional marketplace.
Exactly. It's not going to be like Walmart.
Thank God for that. Yes. Yeah. Nothing against Walmart, but I have those here. I go there to see other interesting things.
Exactly. Exactly. We don't travel to see. Although I once went to Walmart in China because I was really interested to see what it's going to
be. Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. The other place that is also nearby is the Amman Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a place that I recommend people visit just about at dusk, because that's when you're going to see this incredible experience of calls to prayer,
mm-hmm.
the Adhan, that's going to come from 360 directions in the city. Because Amman is a city that's situated on 7 hills.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a city of hills, basically. Everywhere you go, it's up and down. And it's part of the appeal of the city. And so when you're on the Citadel, which is one of the highest hills, mm-hmm. Jabal al-Fala, in the city, and it's dusk time and it's call to prayer, it's just incredible to hear all these different calls to prayer coming in from all across all the different 7 hills. Yeah, it's really special. It's a really special experience.
Well, and because it was the high point, literally, in elevation in the city, that's where some of the oldest, although not necessarily the best preserved history is. So you can find the Roman Temple of Hercules, and you can find an Umayyad palace from that time period after Muhammad, and you can find the gates of Amman there and things like that as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then once you've sort of explored a bit of the ancient part of the mm-hmm. ancient history of the city, then it's time to turn your eye to the modern. And for me, that's really the appeal of the city. It's just, mm-hmm. it combines those two inexplicably in a beautiful way, right? The city is so old and you can feel that oldness. It's like walking in Rome, but then it's also incredibly modern. And for that, I recommend specifically two places. One is an artsy district of Jabal Amman in the modern city center. And nearby is the neighborhood of Jabal al-Weibde, which is basically your hipster cafes, galleries, place there. And both of those are going to be your glimpse into how people in Amman live and work today.
Okay.
In Jabal Amman, there's this place, actually it's a street. It's a street called Rainbow Street. And you will see a lot of different stores, restaurants, cafes there. There is a little tiny street corner there in which you will find this thing called Al-Quds Falafel. And oh my goodness, Al-Quds Falafel is the best falafel I've ever had. The best. It is so good, you guys. You will keep coming back. The first time I went there and I got that falafel, I went probably 3 or 4 more times that week because it was just that good. So don't miss Rainbow Street, Jabal Amman, Al-Quds Falafel. Jabal Al-Waybde, which is the hipster neighborhood there, there is a place there called a Rumi Cafe. And this is my favorite place in Amman to go and do some work at a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And also watch the people because it's always full of people and very lively. People come and go, friends meet there, and they have an amazing selection of course coffees, but interestingly, a lot of different teas from around the world. So you will try Yemeni tea there, you will try Iranian tea there, all kinds of different interesting flavors. So really highly recommended place in Jabal Al-Waybde as well.
Got it. Excellent. Anything else you're going to recommend in our itinerary?
Well, if you are a beer connoisseur, I recommend there is a place just outside of Amman, maybe 40 minutes outside of Amman, called Fuhays. And in Fuhays, there is Jordan's first and so far the only craft brewery. And it's such an interesting experience to go there and to see the actual production of the beer. Because there's like this glass and you can see, the brewery itself and the vats and that. And when you walk outside with your beer in hand, and if it's a clear day, you can actually see Jerusalem on the other side. So that's pretty incredible to do.
Excellent. Anything else in Amman?
Oh my goodness, I could talk about Amman a lot. One of the things that I really love to do in Amman is go to the art galleries there, because that's something that I think not a lot of people realize how thriving the cultural scene in Amman is. One of my favorite galleries there is called Dar al-Anda, and it's also in the neighborhood of Jabal al-Waybde, and that's where you're going to see art and paintings and sculptures from a lot of contemporary artists from Jordan, but also from the region. So you're going to see a lot of artists from Iraq, from Syria, from Egypt, from Palestine. It's just going to be a very interesting look at the contemporary art scene of the region. So if that's something that you're interested in, I highly recommend it as well.
Excellent. And then is there any other place you want to add to our itinerary after Amman?
Well, at this point, I think most people are probably going to be pressed for time because we've covered a lot of stops on the journey already. But if you have an extra day or so, I would recommend, oh my goodness, you know what? We didn't even talk about Karak.
Okay.
Chris, we didn't talk about Karak.
And there's a lot of things that I love that we haven't talked about, but that's okay. I'm letting you lead it.
We need to talk about Karak, because Karak, which is a city sort of in the middle of Jordan, it's between Madaba and Wadi Dana. So it was at the beginning of our trip. Sorry,
it is further south than I realized. Okay.
Yeah, we completely skipped Karak. But the reason why I want to mention Karak, because this is where you go to eat the best mansaf in Jordan.
Okay, you're going to have to define that. I don't know what we're talking about. You lost me now.
Okay, no worries.
I thought we were going for the Crusader Castle. So, you know, I'm the history buff.
Yes, and the castle is definitely a cherry on top, but I will go there for the mansaf, not for the castle.
Fair enough. And what is that?
So mansaf is a traditional Jordanian dish of rice, of meat, and of yogurt.
Okay.
So it's pretty simple. It sounds pretty simple, but it's just an incredible dish.
Now, is this the one that you make it and then you turn it upside down to serve it?
No, that's makluba, which is the other very famous Jordanian dish as well. So makluba and mansaf are the two rice dishes that you're going to see in Jordan a lot. And the makluba is the upside down one.
Okay.
And the mansaf is the dish with rice, with lamb, and with fermented yogurt. It's really good. You should definitely try it wherever you see it in Jordan. But for the best mansaf, you go to Karak. And the reason why is because that's where the best lamb is, Jordan is in Karak.
Okay.
And if you are really well connected, you call the restaurant ahead of time and you say, hey, I'm coming tomorrow. They're going to prepare the young lamb for you. And they're going to prepare that mansaf specifically for you. And it's going to be the best dish outside of zarb, outside of falafel that we had in Amman. It's going to be the best dish that you'll have in Jordan as well. It's really good.
Excellent.
But you asked me if there was one other place that I would recommend people to go if they had a little bit of time. And I know I actually saw that Jerash was one of the places that you really enjoyed in Jordan.
Oh, loved it.
We didn't talk about Jerash at all.
Well, again, history buff. And you talked about the well-preserved Roman ruins in Amman. Jerash has some of the best preserved ruins that I have seen ever. And I was there in May when there were a dozen people there. I was told by my guide that if we were there in April, he would have lost me five times in the crowds. But that was, I think, one of the reasons that I enjoyed it is I also got to explore it practically on my own.
Yeah. And that makes a difference, right, Chris?
It does. It does. Yeah.
Walking those ruins by yourself, it's so majestic. And if you're sort of competing with hundreds and hundreds of other people for the same shots and stuff, it's just not the same experience. So I understand why you would love Jerash so much.
Well, and this is another one of those cities of the Decapolis, those 10 cities on the other side, Transjordan cities.
Yes, exactly. But the place that I want to recommend actually is Ajloun. Have you had a chance to visit Ajloun?
It sounds fairly familiar, but I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, that's the one just north of Amman. It's maybe about an hour north of Amman. And Ajloun also has a crusader castle.
But that's the anti-crusader castle, right? This is the one that was built to fight against the crusaders. Am I in the right place?
Yes, that's the anti-crusader castle. You're right.
Yeah, it's a little better preserved than the other one down at Karak. Yeah, no, fascinating. Basically, you can throw a stone from there at Syria. I mean, you're in the northern part of the country.
Yes. And the reason I want the listeners to go to Ajloun is not for the castle. Although
of course. What can I eat in Ajloun?
Well, actually, no. This time, what I want you to experience is staying in Ajloun Forest. That's a recent development, I think only maybe 4 years old or something like that. Mm-hmm. They've built up these incredible cabins in this Mediterranean forest of Ajloun. Mm-hmm. And those cabins are so well made. They're floor-to-ceiling windows, beautiful amenities and everything inside. Small cabins, not very big. Mm-hmm. Very cozy cabins in the middle of the forest. And you go there to just really disconnect and to be in the middle of that nature and to see Syria on the other side and to walk in the olive groves and to see all the flowers and strawberries blooming and to drink tea with your Bedouin guides. And it's just a really, really relaxing experience. After all the hustle and bustle that we went through in all of these different places, it's just such a beautiful way to really relax and maybe process some of the things that you've learned on the trip. So yeah, I recommend Ajloun if you have a little bit more time. And of course, there's that castle, the anti-crusade castle, but the Ajloun forest and the cabins in it for me are just a wonderful additional experience to have.
Well, and that really underlines when you were talking about the variety of landscapes, Ajloun versus Wadi Rum, very, very different landscapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And interestingly, what it sort of showcases is the makeup of Jordan as the country, because Jordan as the country is sort of made up of, largely speaking, two communities. The first community is the Levantine community in the north. So this is the people
of the Levant.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Levant, right? So that's Lebanon, Syria, Palestine. Mm-hmm. And then in the south is your Bedouin community. Mm-hmm. And the landscape of the north, of the Levant, is more Mediterranean, more green, olive trees grow and such. And the landscape of the south is the desert. And it's just so interesting to me that you get to see both in the same trip. And that's what's really special about Jordan to me.
Excellent. I have a couple other places I would recommend, but I'm not going to go into great detail. I will refer you to the article that I wrote recently or the podcast we talked about, some of the other places. But canyoneering up Wadi Mujib was one of my favorite things to do in the area. And I think the other thing I would recommend, for me, also getting to Bethany, which I think is another UNESCO World Heritage Site, and that's the baptism site of Jesus, which is on the Jordanian side of the Jordan River. And you're right on the border with Israel there, with the border being the river. There's basically a rope between you and Israel, and it's a very special site for both countries. And so it's a not a big major border, but very significant site and very interesting as well. Excellent. We're going to get to some of our wrap-up questions, Yulia. And since you've listened to so many episodes of The Amateur Traveler, I'm sure you're ready for these. If you are standing in the prettiest spot in Jordan, where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Hands down for me, the answer is Wadi Rum. I am very partial to the desert. I'm very partial to the communities that live there. And every time I come to the desert, I feel like I've returned home. There is a special kind of stillness that exists there that I've yet to find anywhere else. And maybe it's because there are these incredible granite and limestone mountains of varying colors. Some are very brown, some are yellow, some are red. Maybe it's the sand itself that's just so deeply red in some places and white in other places. I don't know what it is, but for me in Jordan, it has to be Wadi Rum.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Jordan.
Only in Jordan. You're going to hear your guides say 15 minutes, only 15 minutes. And 2 hours later, you're still waiting for whatever it is that you're after them to do. The concept of shwaya shwaya, slowly, slowly, is something that you're going to learn very well in Jordan. And that, to me, is also the beauty of it, because there is no rush. Take your time, be in the moment, enjoy the sage Bedouin tea, watch the goats, relax, shwaya shwaya. That's Jordan.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Jordan in just 3 words, what 3 words are you going to use?
Beautiful meals and people. Actually, sorry, can I rephrase that?
Sure.
Beautiful people and meals.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Yulia Denisyuk. And we mentioned nomadandjewels.com, where you can check out tours that Yulia runs. She has gotten into the tour business since I have known her, but you also have another site, geniuswomen.com, and there's a trick with the spelling, so check the show notes. She X's out the E in women there, which is a community for, I'm going to let you introduce that one.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. So Genius Women is a community for aspiring women travel photographers and writers who want to break into the industry and follow my path, basically, in which I've been able to work with some incredible publications like National Geographic, like BBC Travel and others, but are unsure where to start or what to do first. We have a lot of resources for that. We also have a podcast where we interview incredible women creators in travel and beyond. So if that's something that interests you, check it out, geniuswomen.com. And like Chris mentioned, there is a trick with the spelling, so check the show notes.
And then in terms of if we want to send people to your best resource for travel to Jordan, where are we going to send them?
That would be nomadandjewels.com/Jordan.
Excellent. nomadandjewels.com/Jordan. And we'll put a link in that to the show notes to that. Yulia, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler. One of these days, we'll over a cup of tea, we'll share our Jordan stories. I'll tell you how I got to be paparazzi for the Pope one day in Jordan. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But that is for another time. Thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Jordan.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really enjoyed it. And I felt like I've returned to Jordan tonight. And I was really there with some of these experiences. So thank you for this opportunity to share this beautiful country with your listeners.
I'd like to extend a thank you to the patrons of the show who help support the show through patreon.com. And a special thanks to Mary Beth Seifert and Angie Bergen, who are the newest patrons of the show. If you also want to help support Amateur Traveler, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I'm trying to catch up from the trip that I took last weekend and get ready for the trip next week to the Galapagos. So we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.